pants. Welcome to Art House Radio. I'm your host, as always, Troy Ramos, in for another double dose of Art House Radio this week, and I would like to welcome you. A hearty welcome and a thank you. I appreciate you listening. If you're a new listener, you're extra welcome, and my apologies in advance. Oh, I am very appreciative of you listening to me vomit my art theories and life problems all over your ears and the ears of the cosmos like a fire-breathing snapdragon puking its way through the garden trying to find that drop of water and occasionally letting a bee fuck me for some sort of sugar photosynthesis-related thing. I don't know if flowers are aware of what's happening in that regard. Maybe they are. Are they conscious of their own photosynthesis? Is it photosynthesis? Are they conscious of their own pollination role? I would guess not, but I don't know. I've never met a flower. The music that you're hearing is from Project 100. What is Project 100? Well, it's something I started a while ago, and it's for up to 100 people who would like to donate to me as a composer, not necessarily as the show, but maybe. And in return, I would write a work for you, and you could tell me what you might want it to be about. Not the sounds, but like the idea. So you could say to me, I want to dedicate this to this person, or I want this to be specifically written for me and title it that way as well, sir. And I would do that. You could say, I just want to be about beans on toast, which is huge in England. Not so much here. I'll give it a try. Not sure if I'll like it. So that's Project 100. The music you're hearing is the first one of that project. It's called The Birth of a Ghost Bike. You can go to arthouse43.com/arthouseradio, and there's a blog post up there where you can listen to the work in its entirety for a while, because eventually they'll go on iTunes and Amazon, as I like to call it sometimes, and will be sold as like a Project 100 LP. So I've got a couple more coming down the pipe. Is it pipe or pike? I feel like it's pipe. It's got to be pipe, not pike. Pike is a fish, right? Yeah. So that's I just wanted to mention that. It's a fun project, and please participate if you would like to support a composer who schemes and schemes and tries to find ways to pay my bills. It's not easy. It's not easy. And if anybody out there is an artist or related to the arts world or the music world, you know what I'm talking about. Okay, this episode, what is it? It's this thing called State of the Arts. What is that? Well, I'm going to stop asking myself questions. I don't know why I'm doing that. State of the Arts is basically this. I go to some sort of art space. It could be a gallery, street art, museum, whatever, with somebody. And then afterwards, we have a conversation about it. It's just that simple. And that's what I do today. What I bring you today. This is actually a conversation from a while ago. Katrina Daniels and I went to a place called the Box Factory in St. Joseph, Michigan. And then afterwards, we looked at some of the art, you know, opined about things, browsed, and then we talked about it. And that's exactly what I said it was going to be about. See, I said it and I delivered. Boom. Let me read a couple of quick stats for you, by the way. There are, if you can believe this, this is from 2014, a New York Times article by, I don't know if I wrote down who wrote this article, I apologize, but it's from 2014, and it's really interesting from the Service Institute of Museums and Library Services. There are more museums in the U.S. than there are Starbucks and McDonald's combined. Now, listen, if that doesn't give you hope for the Americans, I don't know what will. You're living in a time of turmoil. And by the way, the turmoil has been happening for quite some time, not just recent developments, but you're living in a time of turmoil again. And all of a sudden, somebody like me drops that stat on you. Now, that tells me that people love museums. Could this be... They're not all art museums, obviously. Some of them are like the Macaroni and Cheese Museum, probably. The Chocolate Museum in Hershey, Pennsylvania, you know, things like that. But nevertheless, museums are quite popular. I mean, 35,000 compared to 25,000 Starbucks and McDonald's combined. I would have thought there would have been more, but I guess 14,000 is quite a fucking lot, isn't it? 14,000 McDonald's? That's just in this country. Whew. We like our burgers, don't we? So that's an interesting stat. The city with the sort of, I guess, maybe the highest cultured city, according to this report, was LA. LA County has 681 museums. New York, you'd think it would be New York. It's not. 414. That's where they come in. 414. And then the top five are rounded out with Chicago, San Diego, and DC. DC's a little bit of a surprise because I don't, you know, I've been to DC, but I don't think of it as being like a museum place. It makes sense, I guess, since it's, you know, apparently our capital. I don't know why. I like think we should honor the state capitals, not the, you know, I mean, DC is the equivalent distance to from there to me, or in general, like that King George III was to the colonists. Like, why am I listening to these people? Anyway, the other one that was a really big surprise was San Diego. Hey, San Diego. I've always wanted to go. I've never been. I've been to LA, so I've been close, but I've always wanted to go to San Diego. Now I have a reason to. All those museums. Sounds pretty awesome. Okay, so those are some interesting statistics. State of the arts will happen once in a while. It's just whenever I get a chance to go to a museum with somebody, could be anybody, and we get to talk about it. So we happen to be in Michigan at this time in a city called St. Joseph. And the box factory itself was started in 1903 when it was the Williams Brother Paper Box Factory. So they made, I don't know, mattresses or something like that. It didn't really say on the website, but I feel like they made mattresses. That's what I've heard from locals, that it used to be a mattress factory. It's beautiful, by the way. 1903, and then it was purchased by the Berrien Artists Guild in 1995, and they renovated into what we now know as the Box Factory. And you can find more information at boxfactoryforthearts.org. Okay, so Katrina Daniels, Exhibitions and Gallery Sales Director at the Lansing Art Gallery and Education Center in Lansing, Michigan, of course. And I went to the Box Factory, and this is the conversation we had. So remember to follow us at ArtHouse43. That's Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, everything. You can also go to arthouse43.com and make a donation to the show. Your support is always needed and appreciated and loved and all that. So follow us. We'll follow you back. If you get a chance, please, if you like what you're hearing or you hate what you're hearing, you feel compelled to write a review. Reviews are a great way for us to sort of move into the realm of where we might find all the people with whom we should be connecting. So a review, a rating, it would be great if you could do that. I would appreciate it. Thank you so much in advance. If you do that, if you've done it, thank you. Yeah, that's all I'm going to say about that. Please enjoy the conversation, and I will see you on the other side. So we just got out of the Box Factory in St. Joseph. Go.
Yeah. I don't know what to think of it. It's The space is beautiful. I love the warehouse, and it's an artist work studio space with community, like, entertainment space. The art really ranges from being very professional, high-quality work, to being, dare I say, tchotchkes?
Paintings of wolves.
Paintings of wolves, lots of, glass jewelry and some... But, I mean, there are definitely some pieces in there that are really strong, and some artists that I think are really working there, taking that space seriously to advance their work. And I think that there are definitely hobbyists.
You think that there are hobbyists or they're hobbyists?
There are artists there who are hobbyists, who I venture to guess that some of the people there are retired, maybe sort of dabbling in art. You know, this is something that they have the time now. Maybe they have the luxury to rent a studio space, and they're kind of experimenting, and, you know, this is a hobby space for some of them.
They have the time, and this is the time to perfect their portraiture of their grandchildren.
Or wolves.
Or their grand wolves. It is a really interesting space. It's a beautiful space. You could do a lot with it. And I think the setup of it is fairly nice. I mean, we come back to the question of content again. Like, are we seeing things through urban goggles? Like, you know, are you and I seeing things through the New York, LA, Portland, mm-hmm. European art coggle, mm-hmm. or the spectrum, or whatever you want to call it? But I definitely don't feel like a lot of the content in there is interesting, because for me personally, it's a lot of representational stuff, and I don't particularly care for that unless it's done in an interesting way or it's done so well that is so rare, but it becomes like I don't want to do representational stuff, but I'm really good at it and I have to do this. But it feels like everybody's striving towards that, and that seems like a follow the leader type of thing rather than how many artists were there, maybe 300 or 400 at least, are different paintings. Like, there were probably maybe half a dozen to a dozen works that felt like they were doing something that wasn't chasing that one idea of lighthouses in the state or portraits of someone, regardless of whether they're good or not. They're all chasing that one goal.
Right. I know, and it's interesting because it makes me wonder, like, if this is a community space, this is a nonprofit space. One of the goals, because the artist studios are open to the public, is actually to create like a conversation between the public and the artists. So I question whether it should just be open to anyone who has the funds to open a studio, or if it should be jurred, and, you know, if it should be relegated as a serious art space.
That's interesting, because you're talking about sort of a blind jury, mm-hmm. seeing which work is interesting, and rather than who can afford the $400, $500 a month.
Yeah, exactly. Because I wonder if you had maybe scholarships available or something for those who couldn't afford it but who were really talented, if that might be a better use of the space. Or if it really... So I don't really buy into this idea of, like, everybody's an artist. And sometimes I think with community art spaces or art education spaces, that can sort of be there. And I don't mean this as, like, is a put-down. I also don't think everybody can be a neurologist or, you know, an electrical engineer. So
or a city planner.
Or a city... Definitely not everybody can do that. You know, I think it's a profession and a talent, just like anything else, you know. Not everybody can be an athlete. But for some reason with art, sometimes I think we say, like, oh, everybody can be an artist, especially in art education spaces or nonprofit spaces. And I wonder if it's sort of the chicken or the egg. Like, which came first? Like, did we do we look at small towns and in these community art spaces and say like, well, this is the art that's relevant to them because it's a lighthouse or a cat or something of that nature? Or is it that we just said like, well, this is all we've got, instead of sort of challenging the status quo? Because there were artists there that we saw that were doing really interesting, beautiful work, but not that many of them. And I wonder if maybe you opened it up and gave opportunities to people who can afford it but were talented, if that would change that.
Or even people that maybe had a decent amount of money, but they were doing interesting things, but they weren't looking to do that. So if you, somebody's curating that space. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm not saying they're not doing this, but isn't part of curating going out and finding those people? It's like a talent scout in a way.
Yeah, curating is about finding talent, but it's also about editing. So when you curate an exhibit, because that's one of the things that I do by profession, is I don't take everything. And even if there is an artist that I believe other work is strong, I'm not going to take every piece, because I want the show to tell a story. I'm looking for a concept that I'm trying to showcase. And so editing is important as well. I do kind of wonder with some of that, they had a large gallery space, and I do wonder if that gallery space was something where just everybody had a space in it, because it was really kind of jarring, the different types of talent, the different levels of talent, I think, that we saw in there, the different levels of some people had interesting work. It was terribly framed, or it wasn't lit well, or it was maybe a photograph that was printed on a canvas versus printed on like silver gelatin paper, which made me wonder, is it helpful? I mean, are these artists getting guidance to improve their craft, or are they sort of working in a bubble, in their studio spaces? Because I think the idea of these spaces is not only that the community can engage with the artist, but also that the artists can work together to become better artists. But when you and I walked through there, it was really quite empty. And then the few artists that we did see working were still sort of working, in isolation, which I understand that you have to do that for the creative process. But I do wonder how much actual collaboration takes place in a space like this, and does it really benefit like the artistic process?
Yeah, I don't know. It would definitely, feedback is definitely important. But if you've got a group of people who are sort of doing similar things, they're probably all feeding that same idea. So you've got like these paintings of portraits and other sort of uninteresting styles. So they might be encouraging themselves. I bet you anything there are people who are better at portraits than others, and so they might go to them like, how are you doing cheeks? Like, how are you? And that might happen, but I don't know if there's any conceptual pushing going on. Like, why are you doing this? Like, okay, so you want to paint a picture of this, a tree, a lighthouse. Why? Aren't there enough lighthouses? What else is there? Is there a way to represent a lighthouse with a different form, a different, a different shape? So I don't know if there's enough of that going on, maybe.
Yeah, I agree. And I guess I kind of question, like, what is the goal of the space? Is the goal of the space to, because I don't know the mission of the Box Factory, so I don't know if the goal of the space is an arts education space, or if it is just to create some level of awareness, or it could even be an economic, boon. You think about the creative economy, a lot of cities are looking at artist live workspaces to increase creative economy. So I think that would depend on, what their mission is and what their goal is. But I wonder what sort of the ideal space would look like. Maybe for me and you, it would be more avant-garde performance art and, people just sort of pushing the boundaries, but maybe not everyone's comfortable with that.
You mean the ideal content for the space?
Yeah.
It would be interesting to put different things in there and see how people reacted. Like if you put, just as an example, like if you filled that place with, say, Basquiat's or Rothko's, would people who do portraits, I feel like the ironic thing or the odd thing is that people who do portraits generally refer to abstract or non-representational paintings as below them.
Yeah, and it's interesting because there are artists, if you look back historically, you look at Picasso, he was extremely technically proficient in portraiture or figurative work. He chose not to do it because he chose to push boundaries and express himself in another way. I think that sometimes people look at that art as sort of the other. And I wonder though if you came into a small community in the Midwest, this is primarily white, I'd say we're looking at a lot of young families and people who are maybe retired, so probably not a huge group of young professionals here. And you brought in these avant-garde performance artists, and you brought in, you know, John Cage style musical productions, and just, you know, people just putting canvas out in the middle of the gallery space and painting on the floor, you know, would people come in and go, yeah, well, it's kind of interesting, it's, you know, or would it be upsetting and jarring, like they really are just wishing that the cat painting would come back?
So the people who do portraitists they would view a Rothko, or think of somebody
Mondrian's just very lines, geometric shapes, primary colors.
Sure, or Rauschenberg or whatever. Like this is, like they view that as terrible. But it's the reverse also. So you have people who like are into Rauschenberg and into that kind of art. They view portraits as being below them. So it's like it goes. To be fair, it goes both ways. Both. I don't know that either person really, maybe, respects and understands each other, so maybe there's some sort of common ground to be met there. But there are some people that I think that would go into a place like the Box Factory that would probably resonate really well. Like if you put Cindy Sherman's work all through there, I bet you they would probably enjoy that. I don't know.
That's a really interesting idea. Cindy Sherman, quite possibly. She does portraits. For those who don't know, Cindy Sherman would use her own body as a template to, she would modify her own appearance in different portraitures to tell stories. It's photography. Possibly. I mean, it might be sort of a gateway, right? It's photography, it's portraiture. It's very conceptual, but it's more accessible, especially maybe some of her earlier work, especially before she got really into prosthetics and things of that nature. Yeah, I think that's really interesting. I would like to see a place like this, maybe that the artists aren't just there, you know, to sort of feed the community. Like, what if you brought in a Cindy Sherman solo show that was there for 2 months? I wonder then if the studio artists that were working there, would that start to challenge some of the work that they were producing? If outside work was brought in and that was a little bit more challenging, I wonder if you would start to see a change in their technique or a change in their concepts.
Yeah, I say Cindy Sherman because I had a curator once ask me at the Portland Art Museum, how do you think people are, she curated a photography exhibit, and she's, how do you think people are, do you notice the people are engaged or like they whatever? And I said, I think so. And I think they're engaged more in this gallery, in a photography gallery in general, just in what I've viewed. They're more engaged because they can relate to photography. They don't, if you put them in front of a geometrical painting or an Ellsworth Kelly or something, like they might go, I don't get it, even though there might not be anything to get. I don't know if that's the point of art, but photographs they kind of get. And so Cindy Sherman, they could look at it and go, oh, she's, even if you don't register what she's doing, you might get that, like, oh, she's, this is, the, it's interesting, aesthetically interesting, and she's kind of wacky.
Sure. Yeah, I agree. I know, it's very interesting. I just question, like, whether or not, like, you know, we're talking about, like, referencing back to us looking at this through an urban lens. So is this Midwestern artwork that we're seeing in terms of content, or is this just, not all of it, is some of it just poor quality artwork, or is it what the market wants, or what the artists think that the market wants? And maybe that's why we're not seeing Cindy Sherman and we're not seeing Basquiat, you know. Maybe they think that's what their expectation is as people who are actually on the production end.
If I'm lucky enough to have anybody listening to this who's from St. Joe, Michigan area, or Berrien Springs or Benton Harbor or whatever in the Southwest, it would be interesting for them to tweet at me or send me a message that's saying, like, listen, fuck faces, my friends and I all get together and talk about this all the time. You're listening to a stacked, what you're seeing when you go to a box, and I'm not slighting the box art, but this happens in galleries a lot, where they stack the deck full of their friends or the people who are around, the people who can afford the studio space. We'll give it to you. I'm sure we could go to, if we could go into every house that had an artist in it in this area, I'm sure we would find several dozen artworks that were, like, interesting, but they would never get a chance to go in there because they don't have the right connections, they don't network in the right circles. Mm-hmm. That happens everywhere. So I'm sure that it's happening there too. But so you have this idea of people who own a gallery, like this space, who are they're only seeing the world from their perspective, their roots. So they don't branch out and find someone who was like Cindy Sherman and pushing the boundaries, or whoever else. So it would be interesting to have a John Cage type performance, just to see if maybe do they know John Cage and Merce Cunningham and have rejected it, or do they not know it? Because there's a difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Because I run a gallery in a small city, and I've been curating challenging exhibits, and I've been surprised by the reception. And I'm curating them in a neighborhood full of cat pictures and lighthouses, and so I've been really nervous about, you know, will people accept, like, a really completely experimental space that really just, you know, changes the way you feel about it, just sort of is a shock to the senses. But overall, not that I think they've been received well, which is why I wonder, like, is it that these artists haven't been challenged enough? Is it people here haven't been challenged enough? I think it's easy for art spaces and galleries to say, like, well, the note cards sell, the lighthouse paintings sell, you know, nobody wants to buy the, you know, this sculpture that has, you push a button and smoke comes out of it, you know, because they think, like, I can't put that in my house. So I wonder if that's the problem. Maybe these artists, they're, would be interested in producing something more challenging, but they don't know if, you know, if it would be accepted or if it would sell.
I would think that's definitely possible. I would also think that they're not selling enough to make a living off of it, so why not try new things? Mm-hmm. Like, that would be my outlook. If I was doing lighthouse painting after lighthouse painting and I was selling maybe a couple a year, and I'd be good with, like, $700-$800 a year off of an art form that would pay for 1 month's rent. Sure, that's a big deal, but I think you could still make it and then try something else.
Yeah, I agree. Maybe it's just the lack of exposure, you know, the homogenized culture here. You know, I wonder if you took the Box Factory and you sort of picked it up and you moved it over to Benton Harbor, which is economically more depressed. It is much higher minority population, higher crime rate. I'm wondering if you would see the same type of work, or, and if you took that population and you brought them in, what the work would look like then, if we go just over the bridge, because Benton Harbor and St. Joe border each other. I'm curious, would we see things that would challenge us more, or would we see that would it be the same status quo?
Yeah, I don't, well, I think you would, I don't know, but if I had to guess, I'd say you'd see more political things. Mm-hmm. You'd see more commentary on police brutality and things like that, which obviously is a concerning issue. But from an arts perspective, from style, I think it would probably be the same. I'm guessing you would just, the people in the paintings would be of a different cultural background, but it would essentially be the same. The message might be different. I think it would be more political, but I'd who knows? Mm-hmm. But I like the idea of shaking everything up and doing it for the aesthetic, sort of the exploration of different aesthetics rather than economic backgrounds or political ideology. To me, that's more potentially more interesting, just from an aesthetic standpoint.
Right. Well, that's what I wonder, though. But if you come from a different background, if you're coming from a different home life, if you're coming from a different culture, would that change the aesthetic?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, would we go there if we plucked it out and put it into that setting? Are we going to see more sculpture? Are we going to see graffiti? Are we going to see murals? Are we going to see different mediums being used? You know, are we going to see less pottery and more, you know, welding? I don't know. Like, I'm curious of the aesthetic or conceptually if it would change if it was moved. Traditionally, BFAs and MFAs are the most expensive degrees that you can get in the United States. So, of course, that tends to be a wealthier, you know, whiter kind of community. And this is a wealthier, whiter community, but I'm not seeing that sort of challenging conceptual work that you might see from somebody coming out of an academic role with a BFA or an MFA.
It's interesting if that's, I never heard that stat before, that MFAs and BFAs are more expensive than a lot of, interesting, because that's a field that there are basically no guarantees.
Yeah. And yeah, we both have degrees in the arts.
You would think it would be the opposite. Like if you want to get a degree in physics, like that's a most expensive, and then, you know, electronics or engineering, and then at the bottom it's like, you know, it's like community college prices. If you want to study music and art, it's just, you just have to bring like a couple of cans of you know, like a food drive.
Yeah, I wish that were the case. I know, you graduate with like this $100,000 degree, and then they're like, congratulations, for your big girl job you make $24,000 a year with no benefits, and everybody's scrambling for it because everybody's so desperate to get it.
Which means that 90% of the people get handed their degrees and their work schedule at Arby's at the same time.
Yes.
Was there one work at the Box Factory that, or a couple of works that caught your attention?
Gosh, I'm trying to think. There was a few that caught my attention. I really wish I was seeing more. I saw a few like quilts and textile artists. I would love to see that medium be pushed in a different direction. I would love to see someone drape the Box Factory in a quilt, or, you know, like do something with it, you know, that feels more meaningful, you know, than just something that you would put on a bed. Because I think it's a very difficult skill, and I wish that. I do wish that was like pushed a little bit more.
I kind of wish that all the moms in Michigan would get together and make a quilt the same size as Michigan to cover it at night while it sleeps and kept warm.
Yes. Oh gosh, I'm trying to think. There was some beautiful photography. I'm trying to think of something. There was a few, you know, sculptures and things that were really challenging. There were definitely pieces that stood out. One of the thing I don't mean to just be critical of it, but one of the things I noticed though is there were pieces, and this is probably coming from the eye of a curator, but I noticed there were pieces that I loved that I thought were really beautiful, or I thought were challenging something, but then it wouldn't be framed appropriately or maybe lit appropriately, which sometimes in spaces like this, and I don't know if this is true of the Box Factory, but they're like co-op settings, and so they don't have curators, they don't have art historians, they don't have like directors that are actually hanging the work, that are curating the work, and I think that really affects it. I think there's this idea that like, that you're sort of cutting out the middleman. Like, we don't need to have a curator or an art hanger or things like that. You know, we'll produce the work and then show it. But there's this real skill in producing a show. And so there were some pieces that really stood out to me, but I wished were hung better, or I wished were framed better. Or I wished maybe the show had been curated differently. But there were definitely really strong, you know, definitely really strong pieces in there. It's a mix though. You kind of have to take your time and look at each individual piece. Because it's a bit of a hodgepodge group show.
It is, and I don't get the sense that there's a lot of themes going on in the galleries. I mean, there might be, but there may be like, I don't know, three or four large gallery spaces, like galleries within the space itself, and then there are all these different hallways and stuff. So like, it's probably difficult to curate. But I wonder if there are multiple curators at this place. It like seemed like there were lots of offices and whatever. I don't know if there's a head curator and assistant curator, and but it definitely feels the space has a lot of potential. I think if you lived in this area, it's a great thing to have, especially if they're having performances on Saturdays or plays or whatever. So I think there's a lot of potential there. I love the space, and maybe I've been going there for a few years and I haven't seen much change in the content, but I also may have missed some shows that were interesting. So maybe we were talking yesterday about politics and how you can accept the way things are, and sometimes you have to be the one that changes things, and maybe there's somebody who will hear this or was already working on getting a John Cage type performance that will happen there and sort of shake things up and move things in some direction, not in the New York Cage direction, but in a direction that's a little bit conceptually more challenging. Or I don't know that art's supposed to comfort us all the time and reiterate the things we love. I don't know that that's the case, but I think at least percentage of the time it's supposed to like say like, there are no expectations to be met in this world. Like, you can't have everything go your way. So you got to be scared into your uncomfort zones sometimes.
Yeah, I think that art's a great platform for difficult conversations. I think it's a little bit safer. It sort of allows people to walk into a space. You're not yelling at them with it. You can sort of challenge ideas. Sometimes it's just looking at design in positive and negative space and how they move through it. But sometimes it could be very political or challenging. But if you look back art historically, I mean, art has been used to teach or to challenge or to create conversation since the beginning of time. You know, even if you look back at Renaissance period work, you know, that work was still there to tell a story. It was still there to teach and to guide, and it had layers of meaning. It wasn't just decorative, you know, and so I think, I mean, certainly art can be inherently beautiful, but I do want to see things that are also challenging me, but also challenging. I like to see a space where the artists are challenging themselves as well. You know, we met an artist there that said like, oh, I guess I'm sort of a watercolorist, kind of, you know, brushing it off, like, nah, this is too, she didn't take it too seriously, or didn't, you know, sort of give that persona. But what if this was a space where artists came and really pushed themselves conceptually and technically, and and used it as a space where they could come and focus on their work and really build from it, I think, and not just pump out things that they think might sell. I think that would be a really important element of the space.
Yeah, and I think places like that maybe don't have as high of a need for or a want for experience. So like this particular place, the Box Factory, has like galleries. It's massive. I think it's an old mattress factory that sort of converted into all these different spaces. And they, at the back, they sort of have resident studios where all these artists can whatever. So it would be interesting if you went in there and one of the artists didn't have paintings or anything, but you walked in there and it was like you were walking into a scene of a theater play. So like as soon as you walked in, he was like, "Where you been, Charlie? Listen, I've about had it with you. Sit down." Then you immediately, like, there are no cameras. It's just an experience that's happening. That would completely change what we went through. I mean, if you look at the contrast between the two, that would be a completely different experience.
Right. Yeah, that's so interesting. Maybe that there's some sort of engagement with people. Maybe that there's studios that you can walk in and you can touch something, or you can interact with a piece, or you can like leave a mark on something. Yeah, I wonder if that could just be, you could do something to completely change the way that we look at art. I love the idea of theater or performance sort of challenging and making a little bit uncomfortable. I'd love to see that in the visual art as well.
Also, because I think if you go away from what's comfortable and you experience things that are uncomfortable, you're either going to reject it, or because you're either going to embrace it because it's interesting, or it's going to reinforce the things that you were right about. So I think it's a win-win personally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. If I curated a show and the community said like, it's all right, I would be really disappointed. Every show I've exhibited, I've had people say, some people say they hate it, some people say they love it, some people say, "I don't understand what you're doing." I would much rather that than somebody comes in and goes, "Oh, nice, you have some flowers from watercolors, okay." And then they just walk out and they forget, and it doesn't make any sort of impact, and it doesn't, I think that would be the biggest failure.
To sort of give up on pushing yourself or pushing what you're presenting?
Yeah, and just becoming complacent, I think, would be the biggest failure. Even if I try and it's a complete bust, I think I would rather have that and then look back and say, like, okay, you know what, it didn't work. It didn't work for these reasons, but I'll try something new. But I think I would rather that, though, than just jump on the bandwagon and be like, "Oh, you know what sells really well? Our little kitty watercolor cards and stuff." And so I'm just going to get rid of the Rothko, and we're just going to have Hallmark cards.
That's the next step. It morphs into what we see often, which is places label themselves as galleries, but they're really just shops. They're shops where people make things like stoneware and glassware and all that stuff. It's interesting, but I don't know that it's a gallery in the traditional sense. It's not artwork or a performance art or something.
Yeah, that is one thing that the Box Factory has to its credit, is it is a gallery space. It has a really beautiful gallery space. And then they also have an exquisite performance space. So that, I mean, the physical space is amazing. And so it's a beautiful space to engage with work, and it's a beautiful space to hang work, which is, and I think they're true to that. You know, they have a very tiny sort of gift shop, if you will, but it's very unobtrusive. It's very, very small. It's near the reception area, but the rest of it is just a truly beautiful space to view work. So I think I do appreciate that's available in a space that hopefully is sort of accessible to the community.
And it's in a beautiful area. Like, it's down hills, and the lake is not, Lake Michigan's not far off it, and there are these houses, and if you go further down the hill, there are restaurants and like a dock and everything. But you don't get the feeling that you're in some sort of resort building. It's definitely in a neighborhood, but it has definitely has a lot of potential, and it's huge. And you could probably turn it into a museum if you wanted to, a small museum. Mm-hmm. I've seen smaller.
Oh, you could, especially if you weren't a collecting museum. If it was, if you had rotating exhibits, absolutely. It's a beautiful space. It's historic. I love the historic preservation use of it. There's nothing that I hate more than just new builds that don't have any character. So this is it's a gorgeous space to see art in. I would love to see the artists maybe ramp up the work they're doing.
And I don't know, I'm guessing it's probably like 100 years old, maybe early 19th century, something like that.
At least, maybe even older. And it's just beautiful. It's this old brick building, old warehouse with, you know, exposed beams and hardwood floors and tons of natural light. It's really lovely.
And we're walking through it. It's so lovely with all the hardwood floors and the huge windows and like the ceilings, super high ceilings. I actually had the thought when I was walking through, were they more thoughtful about building even mattress factory buildings than residential areas back then? And like, we don't seem to be interested in creating spaces that are so positive on ourselves and our way of life and our thinking and the way we feel and the energy. Like, they were creating beautiful spaces for a mattress factory in the 19th century. Very thoughtful.
Yeah, I think that could be a whole other podcast, but yeah, I don't think that we're saying builders build for human-centered. There isn't a lot of human-centered design. I think that happens in galleries. I think it happens in museums, in homes, and it's really too bad. But this is a space that, what I love about it is like when I walked in and I wanted to slow down, I wanted to look at the work. It felt quiet and thoughtful, but not reverent. It doesn't feel stuffy, but it does feel though that it's a place to sort of hang up your cell phone and just slow down and take in the work, which I love.
I love the idea of hanging up your cell phone before you enter places. There should be hooks and racks for that.
It's like hanging up your coat, hanging up your cell phone. Yes, just check it before you go in.
Box Factory, St. Joseph, Michigan. Thanks for listening. Arthouse Radio is brought to you by wonderful people like you who go to the website arthouse43.com, and they can do one of two things. You can click on donate and make a direct contribution, or you can click on the Amazon link at the top before you shop away and then just shop away like you normally do. Artistic projects, podcasts, these things are never free, so any support you could give would be greatly appreciated. All right, you can also follow us at arthouse43 on Instagram and Twitter, and facebook.com/arthouse43. Okay, until next time, friends. Thank you.